Well, hey, everybody. It's me, Greg. Sorry we had a little technical difficulty off the top of the show, and we're a little bit late. But Sam Constantino is going to come up to talk about the NHL draft. And then David Lozo, my good friend from the Bleacher Report, is going to join us later on in the program. Merrick did an AMA today on Reddit that you may have seen. Didn't answer my question. Makes me kind of sad. My question to Merrick was... thanks for doing this, Jeff. Love the podcast. Is there any link between veganism and having the inability to grasp how pathetically terrible the shootout is? I'll hang up and listen. And for some reason, not only did he not get around to it, but no one even upvoted it. So I don't even know why I bother with the Reddit AMA. Why do I even bother? Anyways, Sam's coming up to talk about NHL draft. Lozo on ye old, NHL in general. Question of the day is, give us one player you're certain will be traded this summer. Noah Love writes in Patrick Sharp. And then Bruce Arthur corrects him and says that that tweet should have actually been to the tune of Chelsea Dagger, which I think is pretty great. Sam Constantino, as you know, is a draft maven for Sportsnet and co-hosts the Junior Podcast with Jeff Merrick. There's some kind of cosmic anomaly that is allowing me to talk to Merrick's other podcasting partner on a podcast on which Merrick is not appearing. Sam, how's it going?
Yeah, it's weird how this world works, and I hope I don't Wally Pip him.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. There's always the possibility of that happening. Sam, this draft, obviously, we know who goes one, we know who goes two. What do you think is going to happen with the third pick in this draft with the Arizona Coyotes?
I think common sense would tell you that Arizona would look at a defenseman and Hanifin would be that guy. I'm not sure they're going to go that way. They have a real good forward crop up and coming with Christian Dvorak and Max Domi, Anthony Duclair since he was acquired. But the one area where they might be able to use a big body is at center ice. And I think Dylan Strome is that guy there. Now, if they go with Hanifin or Strome, neither one of them would surprise me, but it almost has to be one of those two players.
Yeah, and you'd think it'd be Strome, don't you? I mean, considering their needs up front, considering the direction of where this team is going. I mean, obviously they have a couple of really good wings to flank whoever the top center is going to be on that team. So Strome kind of makes a little bit more sense there than Hanifin, I think.
Yeah, in my mock draft, that's where I picked him, and that's what I think is going to happen. But, everyone talks about Noah Hanifin, and Hanifin has, being the three guy kind of cemented in that spot for the last year and a half. So I guess a lot of people wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. For me, though, I think Strome is the guy there. I mean, yes, it's Junior, but at some point you can't shy away from what the numbers were, and 129 points with a six-point final game to cement top spot in the OHL scoring race. That's pretty heady stuff. And when I look at Strome, everyone says, down the stretch he was a little slow and this and that and the other thing, but I think the fact of the matter remains that he might have been banged up a little bit. And, you look at the lineage and look at his brother and say, you know what, this is a guy who's probably going to figure it out here. Just as Ryan has. And that's kind of the way I see things playing out. There seems to be no issues with Ryan Strome getting top line minutes and being able to play effectively, with the New York Islanders. So I think that is going to play itself out with Strome in that spot.
Let's go with this premise that Strome goes at three to the Coyotes. They don't flip the pick. They keep it. They draft Strome. So that means you have Noah Hanifin on the board at four for the Leafs, but the common perception is that the Leafs are going to go forward as well.
And Mitch Marner would be that guy simply because there will be no one at the draft that has better intel on Mitch Marner than Mark Hunter. Having said that, the Toronto Maple Leafs have yet to name a GM, yet there's about seven of them there. So when you add Mike Babcock into the mix, who knows if Kelly McCrimmon ends up deciding to make his way over to Toronto. You got Kyle Dubas, you got Pridham, you got Mark Hunter there. There's just so many guys in the mix there. That pick at four for Toronto is going to tell me as much about the player that they take as it will the organization in and of itself and exactly where the organization is at, if everyone's on the same page, if there wasn't some unbelievable internal dialogue between all of the people in that management slash GM group. So that's a fascinating pick for me on a number of fronts. But, you know, based on you know, the knowledge that at least my understanding that Mark Hunter is the guy who gets to make that decision, I can't see them moving away from Mitch Marner at that spot.
Yeah, and that's a good question about the Leafs, too, because, I mean, obviously the common denominator between my podcast and your podcast is a certain gentleman who's a huge fan of Kyle Dubas. And you wonder if Dubas has the ball in his court right now when it comes to free agency and things like that. And you've heard that Hunter is going to be the point man for the draft. But, I mean, is there a chance that if Dubas has a significant influence on all facets of player personnel right now that he could influence this pick? And if so, does that dramatically increase the chances it'll be Marner?
Oh, boy. My personal thought is that when it comes to the draft, I don't think Kyle Dubas will have very much of an impact in that regard, at least in the first round.
Yeah.
That would be my thought. Now I could be way off base here, and yes, he has that, you know, the AGM title, but my thought would be that this is going to be primarily Mark Hunter's decision with Toronto's two first round picks. You know, I know they're going to be active in trying to shop that second one, even in trying to move up and get another pick in that top 10. How realistic is that? I'm not so sure. And that's where Kyle Dubas may come in. But if the Maple Leafs were to keep their two first-round picks, I think it's very much on the shoulders of Mark Hunter with some input, but not enough to sway the pick from a couple of those other guys.
And is there any percentage, like if you had to put a percentage on it, is there any chance that they go D right there with either Provorov or Hanifin on the board?
Yep, I think Provorov's a real possibility. For some reason, I just don't see Hanifin fitting there with Toronto, and I can't really pinpoint why that is, but that's going to mean a full 100-yard sprint up to the podium for either Carolina or whoever picks after Toronto. But Provorov is definitely a guy I could see there. Here's the thing you have to keep in mind, especially if Kelly McCrimmon comes over. While I do believe Mark Hunter will have the final say, if Kelly McCrimmon does commit and ends up working with the Maple Leafs, he will have no better intel on that player. And so it might become a battle of wills between what Mark Hunter knows about Mitch Marner versus what Kelly McCrimmon knows about Ivan Provorov. And then it might be an organizational decision at that point whether they go defenseman or forward. But that's the fourth pick in this draft is ultimately fascinating for, you know, obviously for the franchise and who's picking it and how things are shaking down there. And again, the player that you talked about, Marner and Provorov are the two guys that I'd have pegged in that spot, but I still think it's going to be Marner there.
Let's go on that premise again, and then that brings us to Carolina at five, and they obviously now have Hanifin and Provorov on the board. In your expert opinion, who's the better prospect for them? Who's the better fit for the Carolina Hurricanes, Provorov or Hanifin?
Well, here's what I'll say. With my own eyes, I've seen Provorov a lot more. I watched Hanifin at the World Juniors. I did not see him play college games, but I have spoken to a whole bunch of people about this, and that's one of the questions that, you know, I've asked a lot of the head scouts that are picking way down the list that, hey, if you were sitting there at the three or four, Hanifin, Provorov, and it's been kind of mixed. Me personally, I put Provorov in that spot for Carolina at number five. There's just no holes in his game, and I think he's a guy who can step right in and play number 6 minutes right away, and by the time the new year rolls around, I think he's a guy that's going to put himself in a position to be a four or five defenseman. Overall, in the grand scheme of things, you know, 3 years down the road, this guy to me has top two, top three potential all day long. There are zero holes in his game. Physicality doesn't bother him. Some people concern themselves about the size. While the height might be an issue, the weight and the thick body doesn't concern me whatsoever. He has good reach, plays with a long stick, shoots the puck well, has unbelievable hockey sense, is committed to doing all the things right, unbelievably coachable. So to me, I think he's the better guy, and I think he's the guy who ends up going there at five.
You think so?
I do.
So where do you think the other guy goes?
He's next, and that's where you're going to see the sprint up to the table. And that's how I've drawn out my mock draft. And I, you know, what do I know? I could be way, way off base. And you just have to refresh my memory. We got five, we got six. That's New Jersey, I think. Now is that six, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And David Conte will blow a tire running up to the podium to get Hanifin there.
And that's, and obviously you're also dealing now with the idea that it's Hanifin, it's Ray Shiro, it's a Team USA guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that. I mean, Lou's never met an American player he didn't like either, and you know he's probably still involved in the process as well. So that's,
yeah,
that's interesting because I'll say this as a Devil fan, I would be kind of conflicted with them going D in this draft, only because I think that this team has a good collection of young defensemen coming through the system. And they have just goddamn nothing up front. I mean, they've got 50-year-old Czechoslovakians up front. So that's the real issue right now for me, is that while I am someone who will always ascribe to the idea that you build from the net out, and they've got a goalie and they've got good young defensemen, and you add a Hanifin to that mix and it's going to be a good thing. There's also a part of you that says they need all the help they can possibly get as far as developing players at the forward spot.
Well, there are three counterpoints that I'll make to that. I mean, first of all, regardless of a Tanifin or a Provorov or whoever it is, I don't think the expectation can be put on the player to come in and impact things right away.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you know, I talked to a ton of guys just about, well, what are we going to do? We're going to take the best player available. Well, whether that means they're blowing smoke or not, I think it's kind of idiotic not to take the best player available. Allow the general manager at that point then to deal from a strength in terms of asset acquisition and move some of those other guys that might be closer. I mean, you know, I think they got a real boon in Damon Severson there. Is he going to be able to go back and repeat that next year? Probably not. But by year three, he'll probably be back to where he was in his rookie year. You oftentimes see that with 18-year-old, 19-year-old defensemen that jump into the league. And I think the last counterpoint I'd make to that is, you know, you look at those couple of things, and then you say, okay, if he's the best player available right there, then I don't think you have a choice but to take him.
Yeah, I might just have PTSD from the Adam Larson selection. It's possible. Let's go one more here. I mean, so let's say that Provorov goes five. Let's say Hanifin goes six. That means we got the Flyers at seven. You have Matthew Barzal still on the board. You've got a couple other guys still on the board. Lawson Krause still on the board. Who do you think the Flyers would take at seven in your mock-up?
I actually have Pavel Zacha there is the guy that I think. Yeah, I know. I just think, you know, one thing that really turned people on with Zacha was especially how he did against Connor McDavid in that first-round matchup when Sarnia was playing against Erie. I think it was a 4 or 5-game series. McDavid had 6 points in the series, which, you know, still sounds a lot. It's more than a point per game. But when you look at McDavid, you kind of throw all of the averages and the numbers out the window. And to think that Zacha competed hard against the plate, made it very difficult for him, played really tough physical brand of game against him, I think those things there are what have really turned people on to Zacha. Now, he was a hard guy to scout this year because, you know, of the injuries he had throughout the course of the year. But he came back, had a really good under-18, and I think now that he's a guy who's going to be in that spot for Philadelphia, and he just kind of fits that Philadelphia mold, doesn't he? A guy who every now and then crosses the line, you know, and has a bit of a brain fart.
And
but a guy
6'3".
Who plays physically, and
yeah,
you
6'3".
Like his size. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot
plays
of things there that scream Philly, you know?
6'3", plays in both ends. I mean, he's a great talent. That I wonder if that'd be a reach at seven, but maybe it's not. Maybe
no,
right.
And
maybe.
You're exactly right, because people are going to look at Barzal and see the under-18s he had, and they're going to say, well, here's a guy who's motivated since coming back from the, you know, the kind of mindless injury of fooling around with a guy in the locker room there back in early November and that sort of thing. But the other thing that you have to look at, and Hextall's talked about it, is the fact that we need to be, you know, is there more upside to what you're going to get from Barzal? Probably there is. Is it more of a safe pick to go with Zacha? Probably that's the case there as well. And I think Philadelphia needs to be in that vein where they need a little bit more of a guarantee than the ability to hit that home run.
That'd be a real interesting pick, but I'm not a bad one. I mean, from everything I've read about the guy, he's sort of that perfect model of a second line center that you'd need. or at least that what he can develop into behind Giroux. So you go Giroux, Zaka for the next, you know, 5 or 6 years, you're probably doing pretty well for yourself, I think, if this kid is on track to being what he is. All right, let's talk more in a general sense here, because I'm always fascinated by what the projections are for this first round. Is Zaka your guy that you think could rocket up the board, or is there someone else that you think is going to be taken way before we all think he will be?
I don't think that's the case. I think where things really start to get interesting in this draft are at 13 with the LA Kings. I think the Kings have potential to kind of go off the board there. But I really feel very strongly about 12 of 14 players really being mumbled and jumbled around in the top 12 picks. And then at 13, that's when things, I think, start to go a little bit sideways when it comes to the LA Kings. You know, Dean Lombardi tends to think a little differently than most. He's had a lot of success. You can't argue that point whatsoever. And, you know, the draft is kind of where they've been able to make their money and do some really good things there. And if not, using players selected from the draft to acquire other players. So they've done a really good job in that regard. But I think, you know, there might be something up Dean Lombardi's sleeve there at 13 that might really change the complexion of how things shake down, you know, from that 13, let's say, to 20 range where there's going to be a couple of teams sitting there, you know, 16, 17 saying, oh, wow, LA went off the board here. That just changed our board a little bit. And now we're going to be able to get a player that we didn't think was going to be possible, you know, 5 picks earlier. So I think that's where things change at 13.
I've seen more than a few mock drafts pencil in Timo Meier's name there at 13 for the LA Kings from the Q. Would that be a surprise if he didn't go there, or would that be a surprise if he did go there?
No, it wouldn't surprise me. I actually have him going before that at 12.
Okay.
Just going to Dallas at 12. There's a lot to like about that package when it comes to Timo Meier. Big body guy, shoots the puck like a pro. Awesome. You know, rise this year in terms of point production going back to last year. Played in a program that over the last couple of years has produced, you know, McKinnon and Drouin, Nick Ehlers. So, you know, he's got that kind of winning sense and what it's like to be a top guy, having learned a little bit from those guys previously. There's, you know, I really, really like Timo Meier's skating ability. A lot of good things there. Tough, you know, big. Got that big cut across his face, you know, his nose there when his visor come up in a game late in the year. So I think he ends up at 12. But, you know, if he's there for LA at 13, maybe they don't go too far and stray too far off the board there.
This next question is kind of related. It's a little two-parter, but I'll ask the first part first because that's usually how it works. Where do you have Lawson Crouse going?
I think at 9, I want to say to San Jose, and
that's not a huge drop for him.
It's not a huge drop, and the thing is, you know, all the questions, oh, has he got enough skill, this and that, the other thing. What Lawson Crouse is a guarantee. He is a guarantee to play in the National Hockey League, barring injury, which is the case with all players. But
right.
When it comes to character or when it comes to not being able to figure things out, that's not going to be the case with this guy. He is a guarantee. Put it in the books. I don't know when it's going to be, if it's next year or the year after, but his self-awareness and the knowledge of the game and a smart skating ability, size, this guy all day, guaranteed National Hockey Leaguer. I don't, you know, at 9, they're going to be ecstatic to get him at 9 if he ends up going that low. I feel so strongly about his game, about his awareness. He had the game face on, the combine, barely cracked a smile. Sorry, my son doesn't agree, apparently. So, you know, when it comes to Crouse, I feel really strongly about him.
And then finally, well, almost finally, who is the player you think could be our Angelo Esposito or Cam Fowler? Who is going to take the tumble this year in the first round? Anybody that you got your eye on?
Well, it's kind of weird to say this, but, you know, Thomas Chabot is a guy I looked at in that spot, because you go to the start of the year, no one knew who he was. You go to the midterm rankings, and he was a guy that all of a sudden was, oh, he's the next Travis Sanheim, he's 15, he's this, he's that. Well, I think now he's taken a bit of a step back, and I think he ends up kind of in that 22 to 30 range. I can't remember exactly where I placed him. Pretty sure it was right in that range, though. And so I think there is a little bit of that to him. The other guy that I'm thinking that might be in that vein, it might be Kyle Connor. I mean, he's got so much skill, but people are worried about his strength and being maybe a little too slight. You know, but he's got top 10 talent, and I think I have him at, I don't know, maybe 11 somewhere in that range.
Uh-huh.
But he's a guy that I could see some teams passing, you know, it's a big, heavy game. It's this and that. Is he going to grow? Is he have the strength to play at the National Hockey League? Those sorts of things. So he might be a guy who slips there, but I still think someone's going to be in love with him in that top 12. So I don't know. Thomas Chabot, it really isn't going to be like an Angelo Esposito type of thing.
Right.
But here's a great conversation I had today. You know, talking about Angelo Esposito, that was the same draft where Thomas Hickey went fourth, and that entirely changed the board for a whole bunch of teams, and that was part of the reason why Esposito slipped to where he did.
There you go. And I guess finally, for those of us who lament the fact that the National Hockey League entry draft is no longer a place where you find your franchise goalie, evidently, in the first round, who is going to go first as amongst the goalies? Who's the top-rated goalie on your board? And is there a chance that they could go in the first round?
Well, I have Samsonov actually going at, what is it, I think it's 30. Who is it? Philly has got the last pick?
Arizona's 30 because, yeah, because I think for whatever convoluted reason, the Coyotes pick 30th and the Flyers pick 29th.
Yeah.
For reasons.
I'm going to Philly at 29 because I think Philly's going to get a
player. Oh, right. Because of the Coburn trade. Right. So Philly's 29 and Arizona's 30. Right.
Yeah. So that's how I see it shaken down there. I mean, for me, I wouldn't touch a goalie in a million years. Not in a million years in the first round. It's just too much of a wild card. And if you go back, and I haven't done the metrics on it yet, but if you go back and look at GMs that have taken a goalie that have seen that goalie come to fruition to be your cemented number one guy, while that GM and that goalie are still with the team, it'd be few and far between. Yes, you're going to get a Carey Price, and you're going to miss once in a while. Yes, you're going to get the Vasilevskis, but for me, it's just too much of a gamble, especially in the draft this deep. When I look at the goalies not really being all that different from Samsonov to Mackenzie Blackwood to Kalen Booth to Samuel Montembeau, who knows? They're too hard to project. Why waste a first-round pick on them? I wouldn't do it in a million years. That's why, and I think you'll see it again this year, second round, one guy goes who wears the pads, and you'll see probably five of the next, whatever, 10 or 12 picks be goalies after that. But I only put Samsonov there because it's obviously a huge area of concern for Philly and has been for a million years. So if they have the guy that they want at 7, now they can maybe take a bit of a flyer at 29 and get who I think they would consider to be the top goaltending prospect.
My only two reactions to that are the fact that Mackenzie Blackwood is a goalie that I'm very high on because I feel like more goalies should sound like they stepped out of Jane Austen novels. And that also, if Ilya Samsonov was drafted by the Flyers at 29, my reaction were I him would be to shave my head, change my name, and move someplace far away from North America. because, I mean listen, the lineage of Ilya Brizgalov in Philadelphia,
yeah.
That's that story of a tale of woe. The tale of woe for any goalie in Philadelphia would be enough to make me try to vacate the premises before I have to go there. Well, Sam, you've given us way too much information and too much of your time. Thank you for being there and helping us navigate the murky waters of the NHL draft. We will look forward to more analysis from you moving forward, sir.
Awesome. Thanks, Wish. And if I get a goal tomorrow, then I know I've Wally pipped them.
There you go. Take care, man. That's Sam Costantino. There was evidently a question in Merrick's AMA about whether I'm ever going to man up and buy Helene St. James the case of champagne. I feel like we need to have her on the podcast. I feel like I need to make one last-ditch effort to try to renegotiate this deal. I mean, I didn't know at the time when I made the bet that, you know, champagne can only come from one region in the world. Thought I could buy her anything with a cork that's fizzy. So we'll talk about this. I think there's room for negotiation. And I've been waiting to have her on the podcast before we settled the wager. For those who don't know, the wager was a case of champagne versus whatever the hell I was going to get if the Red Wings didn't make the playoffs. And apparently they did, based on my research. So
Thomas believes my mom will be certain to be traded this summer. I don't know, Thomas. I mean, she's a bit of a veteran. I don't know necessarily what the return would be for my mom at this point. I'm not even sure she can skate. Jordan Myers says TJ Oshie, Patrick Berglund. I think Oshie would be definite on that list, personally. I think Oshie is, I mean, if you're gonna scapegoat somebody, if you're gonna say we need to change the makeup and shift the paradigm and all that stuff, you trade Oshie. You get a return for him, you will. He's a very good, serviceable forward, and I think that people would love to have him in their top six. I think he fits well in a couple of places. But I think that he would be on my list quite high up the board as far as players that might get traded this summer. Joe Marks says, Philip W. Kessel does not seem like a Babcock guy to me, but very surprised if he is a Leaf much longer. I don't think being a Babcock guy really matters. I think having his contract and the Leafs going into an 8-year rebuild is what sort of matters there, personally. So, and also, like, I don't know. Like, I love Phil, but do you really want Phil around for this? For this struggle, the pain and anguish? Could be some pain. Well, that's shite. Dave Lozo joins us from the Bleacher Report. Dave Lozo, welcome to the podcast. You are here with me because Jeff is doing things.
Wait, it's just you by yourself today?
This happens now and again. Jeff. What?
What? Where is he? Is he just being a lazy Canadian? Is he at his cottage?
No, he's not at his cottage yet. In fact, this is probably the busiest time for him. He was hosting Hockey Central today. He had to do some pre-draft stuff. Because you have to remember, he is one of only six people that pays attention to the draft. So,
Wait. I've seen like the promos for that Sportsnet stuff. They have like 95 people in that picture. Only six care about the draft, really?
Well, I mean, they all care about it in some way, because it's hockey and it's, you know, their ice, their game. But in Merrick's case, like, he cares about it to the point of knowing who might go at, like, 24. Not only who might get drafted at 24, but which team picks there. Those are two things I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. But Merrick seems to know it pretty well.
You know what? What's funny? I'll admit this on your very popular podcast. I was sitting around yesterday, and I was trying to remember who the Devils head coach was, and I couldn't do it. I'm not even, like, making a joke. I'm sitting around, and I'm like, wait. Who do they – it's Ray Shero. Did they – no, it's not Bylsma. It's – wait, no, hold on. Did they hire a coach yet? Maybe they didn't hire a coach. And then I Googled it. I'm like, oh, right, John Hines. That's who
well,
it is.
But in fairness to you, that hire happened while we were covering the Cup Final. And, like,
right.
any news that happens outside the bubble of the Cup Final was something that I was unaware of or blind to or couldn't remember right. Half the time. Like, when we were covering the Cup Final, I did an interview with a radio station in Boston. And they were talking about the Blackhawks and the Lightning and Taves and Keith, the whole thing. I'm like, all right, I'm like home run derbying this interview. Like, I'm knocking them off out of the park each time. And they're like, now switching back to the Boston Bruins, of course, the bees could maybe really use some help, maybe up front. Anybody in particular that you think could be a fit there? And I'm like, I've got no damn clue.
I did the same thing on a Boston radio show. The same thing. It was like, what's going on with the goalies? What's going on with the lack of scoring? And they were like, rumor out of Arizona is they want to trade their first pick. Do you think Milan Lucic straight up is enough for that? I'm like, wait, seriously? Am I on a real rate? Hello? Is it real? I'm sorry, but I have to hang up now. I'm sorry.
So the answer I gave him was Antoine Vermette, because that was the only free agent I could remember from the series we were covering.
It's so bad. Like, I literally, like, there are things, like, important things happen in the world. Like, I was watching John Oliver last night, and there was this whole thing about the $10 bill and, you know, putting a woman on the $10 bill. And I was like, wait, I vaguely remember seeing that on Twitter. Yes, this was actually a really big thing that I'm so completely oblivious to the rest of the world when I'm traveling. It's so bad.
Yeah. I wasn't even aware that we had a $10 bill until you mentioned it. That just shows you how out of touch I am. So
yeah, you with your happens. Hundreds and your rich lifestyle.
That's right. It's just straight Benjamins from me. Benjis and Jacksons. That's all I deal in. So the NHL is happening outside the draft as well. I mentioned Kessel, and I might as well bring it up now. Do you think Philip gets traded at the draft? And if so, is there a destination you think would be a good fit for our favorite pudgy American player?
Like, I part of me thinks, like, you know, you've got Mike Babcock there. You know, why not see what Kessel and Phaneuf will do with him there? But you're right. The other point is that they basically announced to the world, hey, we're doing an eight-year rebuild, so maybe Phil Kessel's not the right guy for that.
Right.
I don't know. It's just his contract is just so ridiculous that I don't know how he's going to fit with a new team in terms of, like, what team out there really needs, like, a top-line guy that doesn't – like, every team, I think, pretty much has, like, a number one line. So you're looking at adding a guy who you're going to move on to your top line. You're going to take somebody off your own top line. You got to fit his contract there. So, I don't know. Nashville seems like a place where they always want to just trade for their guys because they can't sign free agents. But I don't know. I feel like maybe you give them a try for the first half of the season and maybe move them at the deadline. I don't know. It's such a weird situation.
Florida was mentioned as a possibility, and I think Florida has also been mentioned as a possibility for Patrick Sharp because of the Dale Talon thing. But I feel like that could be an interesting fit. We had Friedman on last week, and he talked about how Nashville's got some contracts coming up, like Seth Jones and Colin Wilson and players like that. And if you put Kessel on that team, all of a sudden your salary structure is completely different than what it was. And I get that. But so that's why Florida is an interesting spot, because you obviously have some good young talent up the middle. He'd be a dynamic fit for them. It'd be real fun to see him and Yager on the same power play for at least a year. I don't know. That'd be a good spot for him, but I also wonder what would have to go back to you. That's the real question about Kessel, is, like, what are the Leafs looking for? Like, are they looking for futures? Are they looking for a roster player? I know that Elliott reported that they're willing to take a problematic contract back, which means that I think they're going to try to open the door as wide as they can for teams that are in contention that feel like he could be a last piece. But I'd be really interested to see what level of return they want for him, considering it's clear that they need to cut ties at some point.
Right, like, they're going to have to take back, like, a crappy contract to trade him. But I think the place, like the thing that would be good for him would just to be somewhere like Florida, like Nashville, where, you know, the media is not going to care. Like, they'll care when he gets there, and then they'll just leave him alone. I think that's kind of a big deal for him. I really do think he genuinely hates talking to the media on a daily basis and being the face of a franchise. So, I don't know. If you're down in Florida and it's just like George and Harvey talking to you every couple of days, I think that's probably good for him, you know?
I don't know. Harvey talking to you every day. That could be a... the Patrick Sharp I mentioned is an interesting spot too, because obviously the Blackhawks feel like they have to trade him. The rumored package that was leaked last week as far as the asking price is obviously absurd, because you need to set the ceiling kind of high for him. I don't see this as being a situation where he'd go anywhere but a contending team that feels like, here's a guy who could play in our top six, and here's a guy with three cup rings, and here's a guy that can elevate our team and be a leader and all that, you know, BS that comes along with wearing a ring. Like, to me, like, a team like, I don't know if this is the right fit at all, but I think they're going to end up doing some weird stuff. A team like the Islanders would be an interesting fit for Sharp if the price was right.
You know what's weird too is going back to what you were saying. Like, I thought the same thing at first. I thought, what an insane, like, package is required to get him, you know, the first current player in the top six and like a prospect. But like, if Thomas Vanek as a rental is worth a second round pick, I don't know if that's like the craziest starting point. It's a crazy starting point if you think he's done. Like, if you think like this was the year he fell off the cliff and he's never going to come back again, then it's insane. But if you think he's going to score 60 goals the next few seasons, I don't know if that's like the most insane starting point for a negotiation. It's a starting point. It's not necessarily what he's going to get at the end of the day, Stan Bowman, but it's not, I don't know. Like, if you put him next to John Tavares, you put him next to Malkin or Crosby or something like that, he's going to score 30 goals. So I don't know. I wouldn't do it myself. I wouldn't make that trade. That wouldn't be the package where I'd be like, yeah, that's great. But I don't know. Like, you're right. The whole leader thing, people love the whole, you know, how many rings does he have? He's a leader. He can be a veteran. He can be this. So I don't know. Like, Stan Bowman's, I'm trading Corey Crawford and letting Scott Darling and somebody else play 40 games a year, and I'm keeping Patrick Sharp. But I'm in that camp.
Well, I read today that no less an authority than Kelly Rudy considers the most important metric for goaltending success to be wins. And Corey Crawford has wins, sir. He has the wins.
Same thing in baseball. It's all about wins. Doesn't matter if your ERA is 6, as long as you win 20 games and blah, 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 blah. Like, Corey Crawford, oh, God, it's just such a weird situation because he's a goalie that always looks bad. Like, he never looks like he's under control. He always looks like he's
right.
stumbling around and everything. But, like, it's one of those the game against Anaheim where it's a tie game late. They're down 2-1 in the series. And he takes a swing at Matt Bolesky cutting through his crease as Ryan Getzlaf's shooting. If Ryan Getzlaf hits the net, they're down 3-1 in the series. They probably lose that. And his postseason is basically lost his job in the first round, blew it the third round. Now he's 2-time cup winner, Corey Crawford. You can't question Corey Crawford anymore. I think if you can get something for Corey Crawford, get something for Corey Crawford, man. Like, if goalies in this league. I mean, look at the goalies that lost in the playoffs this year. I mean, Carey Price. John Quick didn't even get to the playoffs. Henrik Lundqvist lost to Ben Bishop, man. The goalie position isn't, unless you have that super duper elite guy, and even if you have that guy, if the team in front of him isn't that great, it's not going to matter. Like, if you can get something for, I don't know, the Blackhawks are in a weird spot. They're not going to trade Corey Crawford, but you're right. Patrick Sharp on Long Island, that's a pretty good fit. I think you should call up Carlson and make that happen.
Crawford's a tough one to tough nut to crack there for me, because, like, I'm with you on a lot of that, but I mean, there's no question he played really, really well in the final. Like, he played really well in the final. Like, well enough to the point where he was actually...
Except that one game where he pretty much lost the game for his team. Like, that's what he does. Like, he either just looks good enough to win, or he's, like, giving up short side goals to Tyler Johnson as he clubs backhand shots towards the net. Like, he's just such a weird
goalie. It wasn't a good moment. It wasn't a good moment for him. But at the same time, like, in the wins, he played really well, and, like... I feel like, I mean, obviously they spend the money because they feel like he's an essential part of their core, or else they're not going to do it. And then the other part of me is like, you know, are you going to create a problem you don't need to create? Like, you've got a goalie, he's fine, he wins you cups. I'm not as nearly as sold on Scott Darling as a lot of people are. I think he's a great story, but we've seen too many guys come up and all of a sudden the next year there's a book on them and they don't put up the same numbers they put up in the previous season. So there's a part of me that's like, you know what I mean? Like, you're making a pro, like Niemi was completely average and you didn't lose a lot if you lost him. I think if you lose Crawford, you do lose a lot and you might struggle to try to reclaim that. And then all of a sudden it becomes, oh, here comes a string of veteran goalies that have never won in the final trying to replace the guy that we let go. I don't know if you want that to happen.
I don't know. Yeah, like, I don't know. I feel like him and Niemi are kind of the same guy at the same time here winning the cup. Like,
Oh, man.
Niemi's not – I don't think either Niemi or Crawford are just average. I think they're both above average. But, like, it's like – I look at, like, Ben Scrivens. Like, Ben Scrivens on L.A. was, like, a 940 goalie. He goes to Edmonton, and all of a sudden he's, like, an 895 guy. Like, if you took Corey Crawford out of Chicago and put him – literally anywhere else, put him on Long Island, like, what would his numbers be? Would he still be the same elite cup-winning goaltender, or would he just be like, hey, he's kind of like Charles Lafolak a little bit? Like, I don't know. I just – $6 million a year for Corey Crawford just seems like it's too high a price. But you're right. If you're getting rid of Corey Crawford, you're just essentially causing a problem that really isn't a problem at the end of the day. So I will defer to Greg Wyshynski on this one.
The real issue for Chicago with Corey Crawford is that Quebec's not in the league yet. And so they won't give you 5 first rounders for Corey Crawford as their franchise goalie. That's the real issue, I think. Hey, so we've got these meetings coming up in Vegas at the awards. Are you going to the awards, by the way?
I'm not going anywhere, man. I'm not going to Vegas. I'm not going to Florida. I'm just going to sit in my apartment and not get tanned for the next week.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, you're pretty good at that, too. I've seen your complexion. So the GMs are meeting in Vegas, and they're talking puck. They're going to talk about overtime, and I don't know if you and I have ever hashed out 3-on-3 together. Are you more in the Jeff Merrick bastardization of the game, or are you more in the Greg Wyshynski, this is awesome, and anything that reduces the shootout is a good thing?
I think I'm in the Jeff Merrick school, but not in terms of, like, sullying the sanctity of grown men playing a sport for a living or anything like that. I just don't think it's going to work. You know, like I'm not like one of these guys, like, this is my game and I got to protect it. I'm not Canadian. I just want the game to be good. Like, 4-on-4 is great. Like, 3-on-3.
Yeah, it is great.
3-on-3, like, if you go back and look at the numbers, it's hard to look at the numbers and treat them the same way as you would in overtime because, like, it's always like a 25-second sting of 3-on-3. So it's hard to get offense that way. But to me, it's just going to break down into like a half court pickup basketball game where like you kind of have to like beat your guy to the net and post up. And there's not enough guys to cycle the puck. There's not enough guys to make plays unless you're making the play off the rush. And to me, if you're playing 3-on-3 and the idea is that you're going to get a bunch of 2-on-1s and breakaways, to me, it's not that far away from the shootout, which is just a breakaway contest. The 3-on-3 is just going to break down into a breakaway contest or a 2-on-1 contest. And again, this is the thing. I keep going back to this, and this is what drives me insane about the NHL. The NHL, they've identified a problem. They said the shootout stinks. We're going to too many shootouts. How do we get rid of the shootout? You get rid of the shootout by getting rid of the shootout. It's that simple. It's not hard, man. Like, and 4-on-4, I didn't do it for this year's playoffs, but I did it a few years ago. In the playoffs, if you looked at when games ended in the postseason, playing 5-on-5, usually it was around like the 11-minute mark was the average. Like some games go 3 OTs, some games go 2 minutes, whatever. But the average was like 11 minutes and a goal would be scored. And that's playing 5-on-5. There's no loser point. Nobody wants to lose the game. I think if you just played 4-on-4 for 10 minutes, you would probably see a lot more games end as opposed to go to a shootout. And again, I know they don't want to do this all season, but to me, just play 4-on-4 till somebody scores. It's hockey. We're the toughest players in the league, but we can't play more than 5 minutes, boys. That's too much. So I don't know. I hate 3-on-3. I don't think it's going to work. I think it'll work for a while, but like anything else in hockey, they'll figure out a way to stop it and it'll just get stupid again.
Essentially, what you're saying about the shootout is that it's basically the herpes of hockey. Like once you have it, you can't really get rid of it per se, but you can hold it at bay with the right medication, with time and patience. But you'll never get rid of it. It's always going to be creeping around. Everyone will know that it's a pox on you, that you have to walk around with the Scarlet H. That's what the shootout is. It's the herpes of hockey.
I can totally see this in the 2015-16 marketing plan. The shootout, it's like herpes. Greg Wyshynski, puck daddy.
That's right. Absolutely. It's exactly how I feel about it. And the problem is sometimes you just can't help but just stare and watch it in disbelief. The other thing about the 3-on-3 that I find fascinating is the fact that the NHLPA is actually in favor of jettisoning the 4-on-4 and just going 3-on-3, while it's the NHL's GMs and BOG that want 4-on-4 and then 3-on-3. And I can't quite understand what that's about. Like, is it the NHLPA, like you said, is it them looking at 3-on-3 and saying, okay, this is a really good mechanism for finishing the game, so now we can get rid of that 4-on-4 grab ass and just play 3-on-3, and the game will be over in like 90 seconds every time. Like, is that essentially what their argument is? Because I can't figure out why they like that model better than the AHL model, which has proven to be good.
I don't know. I think they don't want to play the extra 2 minutes. I think it's more principle than anything, where they negotiated a CBA. Here's what we're going to do. And now the owners are like, hey, let's have you guys play 2 extra minutes. And it's not a big deal, but I think to them it is. It's like, no, we're not going to do that. So we'd rather play the full 5 at 3-on-3. And I think that if you play the full 5 at 3-on-3, as opposed to doing it, whatever, 4 minutes and then 3 minutes or however they want to do it, if you play the full 5 at 3-on-3, yeah, way more games are going to end and way more guys are going to score goals, and they're going to score goals and pick up assists and pick up points, and it's going to look better on their final numbers. They're going to be worth more in free agency if they do that compared to, you know, like nobody cares if Jussi Jokinen had 12 shootout goals in a season, but if Jussi Jokinen gets 6 more goals during the course of actual play, even though it's 3-on-3, I think that looks better, and I think maybe that will mean more money for certain players, but I don't know. I can't figure out what anybody's doing in this league. It's just such a weird thing. Again, we don't like the shootout. How are we going to get rid of the shootout? We're going to get rid of the shootout by not getting rid of the shootout. And even the shootout, here's the thing. If the shootout wasn't worth, you know, if it wasn't just 2-on-1, if it was a different point system, I think it would be great. But it's just such a weird league where, like, they identify a problem and they just never fix it the way they're supposed to, you know? I don't know.
No, I feel you. I feel you. Speaking of new problems... Vegas expansion. So they're probably going to announce this week that they are going to start the process of expansion and open it to bids and things like that. Where are you on Vegas getting a franchise?
I want it to work really badly. I think it would be awesome. I think it would be the greatest like destination for like a hockey fan, because like hockey fans, you know, that travel, you know, they travel to places like, you know, Tampa. Like, people come down from Canada to go see, like, Coyotes games. So I think it would be a cool place to go. to come to see a game in Vegas, whether it's, you know, your team or you just want to go and just check out a game in Vegas. I just don't know if, you know, it just do they have, like John Taffer was on Katie Nolan's show last week, and he was talking about how he's part of, like, that group in Vegas that's getting the whole thing going. John Taffer's my, I love John Taffer. Whatever he says, I'll listen to. So, but he was talking about, he's like,
Hold on. John Taffer? Like,
John Taffer?
Bar Rescue?
Bar Rescue. He went in there and said, shut it down. We got to get a franchise here in Vegas. And they're getting a franchise.
John Taffer is a member of the group trying to get a team in Vegas?
No. But he's just there. Like, he's just there supporting it. He's like, I think he's...
Oh,
like,
all right. I was going to say, that'd be the best thing I've ever heard.
Oh, my God. And I would move to Vegas right now and try to get a job there just so he could yell at me every day. I would love to have that happen. What kind of shirt is that, Lozo? Shut it down. Go home. Put on a new shirt. No, but like, do they have enough fans there? Because he was talking about how, like, you know, we've sold more tickets than we were asked to, and you know, we're gonna have concierges and hotels and conventions. But I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like if you're in your 20s and you're going to Vegas, you're not going there to see a hockey game. Like, if your concierge is like, hey, I got hockey tickets for you, I'm gonna be like, you have tickets to go to, like, I don't know, like Cheetahs or something else. Like, that's what guys in their 20s do. Like, you're not going there to watch, like, some really bad expansion team play, but I don't know.
There's a lot of people, my parents' age that go there too, right? So it's like, they don't stay on the strip. They stay at the budget motel off the strip, but like they're there. And like, there's a part of me that thinks, okay, if you approach Vegas like I approach Vegas, which is that if the game is at 6 o'clock at night and it's over by 9, that's perfect. That's like the perfect period of time that I don't care about Vegas. And then you go to the casino, the table minimums drop, and then you're in business for the rest of the night. That to me, like the six p.m. to 9 p.m. window for a Vegas game would be perfect for me if I was visiting there and I cared about the team that was in town.
But how many people are going to do that though? Like, do you think there's enough people in Las Vegas and the Las Vegas area that are going to consistently go? You know, like that's the thing I worry about, is they're just not going to have like enough of an actual real base. Like, I don't know if there's going to be just enough people just showing up, because I think about it too. Like, people always go to Vegas from like Thursday to Sunday. Like, if they're playing on like a Tuesday, like who's going to go to that game? I don't know. I hope it works.
I think it's a serious concern, and it's the same thing that they said for years about the Panthers and stuff, this idea that, like, and the Coyotes, this idea that you're relying on snowbirds and tourists and everybody else to kind of fill in the holes, and that's not exactly the most solid idea as far as trying to build a fan base. So I get it. I want it to work, too, in the worst way.
But also, like, there's the whole thing, too, where they, like, you're, like, these people that have put down deposits, like, some of the deposits are really low. Like, if you, you know, get to the point a year and a half from now and you're like, wait a second, I put down, did I really do this? I'm looking at my credit card statement here. It says Las Vegas Aces. I'm not paying the rest of this money. Like, you can get out of it really easily. Like, you're not committed to 82 games because you put down $50 in the summer of 2015, you know? I'm worried. I'm worried it's not going to work. But if it does, like, I will move out there and I will become the Las Vegas Wrangler, Aces, whatever reporter if I have to be. Because my God, that's where I need to be. I need to be reporting from a blackjack table on whether or not the seventh defenseman's in the lineup that night. That's my future.
Exactly. But now all I can think about is John Taffer as part of the management team in Las Vegas. Oh my God, could you imagine him outside the arena going, the Las Vegas Black Knights are done, they're finished, the brand doesn't work, say hello to, and then the curtain falls down, the Las Vegas hockey team. It's the
the most generic name. It's always the most generic name on every single bar he fixes.
Yes.
Welcome to the saloon.
Jackie O'Brien's is done, it's finished, say hello to Cincinnati Ale House.
No, but that's what they'll do on players too. Like, they'll actually be outside. It's like, say goodbye to Phil Kessel. Say hello too, and they unveil, and it's like, you know, Zach Dalpy or somebody. And it's like, wait, Zach Dalpy? Really? That's what we did here? This is our thing? Oh my God.
That's all I want. Greatest.
Oh, I want that to happen so bad now.
We redesigned the benches to maximize the flow of people.
He's actually right, going behind the counter. He's like, you're making chicken fingers on this? Oh, my, look at this. This is disgusting. Shut it down.
Just throughout the arena.
Shut it down.
Oh, God. That'd be the greatest, like, between whistles entertainment. Just a camera following John Taffer through the arena as he harasses all the Airmark workers and talks about the conditions.
Look at all this urine on the toilet seat. Who is wiping this down here, people? Shut it down.
There are rat droppings. Buy this bag of popcorn. Buy the popcorn.
You're charging $13.50 for a Bud Light? $13.50 for a Bud Light?
I bought it. He pushes out the person working the beer cart and brings that dumbass who won Bartender of the Year 1 year, and now he's on the show all the time because he works for Diageo.
Or he kicks down the GM's door. You're paying $7 million for Justin Williams? Are you serious? Are you serious right now?
This isn't about your hockey team. This is about your family. This is about you keeping your family together. All right, listen. Before we go, I promised you that you could opine about Entourage. Do you have anything to say about Entourage?
No, I hate that every show on HBO feels like it's like Entourage now. I hate that every show like Silicon Valley is really good. I love Silicon Valley, but like it feels like Entourage. It's the whole every episode is like, are they doing Pied Piper? Are they not doing Pied Piper? They are doing
Pied
Piper. No, they're not doing Pied Piper. Now Ballers is kind of like the Ari perspective of the whole thing. And
yeah, I didn't see Ballers last night. Was it good or was it terrible?
I don't know. It wasn't great. I'm still not sure what The Rock does for a living on the show. Like he's like a money man. He's not an agent. Like he's, I don't know what he does. I think he's just kind of like a famous ex athlete who's supposed to bring in current athletes to the Rob Corddry business thing. And then I don't know. There's like some guy on the show who's like a slot receiver for the Packers, and he had sex with like a drink girl at a club or a bottle service girl at a club, and then he lost his. It's just. I don't know. It wasn't great. I liked True Detective last night, by the way. People were killing that show on Twitter. I thought that was a pretty good setup episode for the rest of the season. That was very unlike Entourage. That's probably why I liked it so much.
I'm going to check that out tonight. So is The Rock playing the same role in Ballers that he played in Pain and Gain? Is that where he got all his money?
I haven't seen Pain and Gain.
Neither have I. I'm just making a joke about a movie that I didn't see. Let's just be honest. finally, for me on the podcast, and you can choose to join this conversation or not, I saw Inside Out last night or yesterday afternoon with the little one, and she's 5 and she loved it, and I really enjoyed it. And it's I kind of knew this but didn't know how deep it went. It is officially joining the movies that have hockey in it list, along with
really?
Movies like Strange Brew, yeah, and Chasing Amy. It's not a hockey movie. It's a movie with hockey in it. She's a hockey player from Minnesota. She moves to San Francisco. She's trying to find her way in life, and hockey plays a role in it. And the team that she winds up playing for is called the San Francisco Foghorns, and Dave's Geeky Hockey Jerseys has a mock-up of what they're going to make eventually for it. And the logo for the San Francisco Foghorns looks like Q-Bert. It's very cute. But the movie was great, and people have been like, return to form for Pixar. And it is, but to me, it was very evocative of Monsters, Inc., in the sense that it reveals a process behind the scenes of this thing in life that we all take for granted, whether it's, you know, the thing that goes bump in the night in Monsters, Inc., or in this case, emotions, and then just inserts chaos into it and sees the processes all break down. Pete Docter directed both movies, and it's very much, in my opinion, like Monsters, Inc., and it's just supremely charming and probably the most well-cast Pixar film since the first Toy Story as far as vocal talent goes. Like Lewis Black as Anger is so like obvious but also great in the movie.
Huh. It sounds a lot like Entourage to me. Is she going to make the team? Is she not going to make the team?
Yeah, there was that moment where Joy turned to Sadness, and Sadness is like, Joy, if we don't fix this little 11-year-old girl, we got to move back to Queens. It was so sad.
I don't like the weather there, baby, bro. God, that show's ruining me for everything. It really has.
Yeah, and then there was that weird part where Anxiety has that affair with a porn star and has a drug habit for about 2 episodes, and then they just drop it. Never
this
affected
is Natasha
again.
Gray. It's not Sasha Gray. It's Natasha Gray. Totally different character.
Totally different character, right. Yeah, and then Anger actually loses a lot of weight and gets into the tequila business. It was great.
Wait, was this movie like really sad at the end? I saw Down Goes Brown tweeting about a Pixar movie that was like super depressing at the end for the parents, he was saying. Was this the same movie?
Ruby thought it was a very sad movie, and I think there's definitely a way to read it as being sad in the sense that like it definitely I mean, the basis of the movie is basically much like The Shootout. Once you inject sadness into your memories, there's no way that your memories won't be tainted by sadness. You can't get rid of it. I mean, sadness is the shootout of emotions, and The Shootout is the herpes of hockey, if you really want to get the SAT question right.
And The Shootout and Entourage is the shootout of television shows. So I think
right.
You've basically covered everything now, yeah.
Right, because most of the people on Entourage had herpes. Comes for a full circle.
This is great. This is great podcasting right here. People are going to love it.
It's what people come to expect when Dad's away. All right. Thank you, Lozo, for joining us. And we'll talk to you again down the line, sir.
Yeah, man. I'll see you.
All right, bye. Dave Lozo, ladies and gentlemen, making his triumphant return to the podcast. Someone could probably tell me if he's been on before. I think he's been on before, but I can never remember for sure who's been on and who's not been on. Having done this show and a previous show, having all sorts of guests on both of the shows. But yeah. There you go. Katie Strang writes, charges have been officially filed against Jarrett Stoll. He faces one count of felony drug possession of a controlled substance. I have a feeling it's going to really affect his UFA status when all is said and done. Keep an eye out on Puck Daddy for our rankings of unrestricted free agents at the forward spot, defense, and goaltending. It is depressing. If you're somebody who wants their team to improve through the free agent market, ladies and gentlemen, mayhaps there's better decisions to make with your money. That's all I'm saying. Thanks to Dave Lozo. Thanks to Sam Constantino. Thanks to producer Sam. Back tomorrow, probably, I think. And then we'll start doing some cool stuff down in the at the draft. Time to go to the draft. Draft party, obviously, on Thursday. More details to come. And there you go. All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks, everybody. Bye.